Blog Talk Radio.
How's day going today? Jam-packed, full show, as usual. Yesterday, we discussed how Donald Trump gave a speech at Liberty University, which of course is a super, super Christian school, and he face-planted. And then I also told you that that's not going to make much of a difference. And it turns out that that's true. It didn't make a difference. If anything, he's getting more praise for being a fake Christian and obviously pretending to be somebody he's not. So we'll discuss that. I'm going to kick it off with that in a second. And then I also have a goofball South Carolina state representative who apparently didn't read the First Amendment. And he wants the government to approve journalists. As somebody said to me when they tweeted this at me, what are we, in the Soviet Union? Some incredible stuff there as well. And then as we move along here today, obviously later on in the show I'll have a bunch of religious lunacy for you today. We got crazy Christians, crazy Jews, crazy Muslims. We got every kind of fundamentalist you can think of. Then also some hypocrisy from Bill O'Reilly. Shock, shock. Our buddy David Pakman calls it out nicely. And much more, including... This is a really random segment, but there was a fantastic article on this, and I couldn't help but bring it to you guys. There was a great piece in The Independent about just how violent and brutal and savage British Empire was. It was stuff I didn't know, or I certainly didn't know the details of it, and they got into all the gruesome details, and so I'm going to give you the facts there, and then also give you the percentage of Brits who say, well, maybe it wasn't such a bad thing. Unbelievable. I mean, humans have this tendency to always defend those in their own group/tribe, and I think that generalizes across all cultures, and it's something that's not a good thing. We should all kind of take a hard look at whatever group we're a member of and, you know, do our best to get our own house in order. All right, let's get started here, and we'll do that with Donald Trump. So yesterday, we discussed how Donald Trump gave a speech at Liberty University, which is, of course, a super, super Christian school. And naturally, he pretended to be really religious, and he face-planted. So he said 2 Corinthians when he was trying to quote the Bible. The reality is it's 2 Corinthians. All people who are, you know, big-time Christians will know this. So there was even some laughter in the crowd when he said 2 Corinthians. And then I believe he went on to say, yeah, this is what the whole ball game's about, am I right? 2 Corinthians, this is the one you like, am I right? It was just sad to watch. And it's obvious that he's clueless. But like I said yesterday, that's not going to matter. So even though he's going to go into this super religious university and pretend like he's super religious and it's going to be an act, it's going to at least be the case that this doesn't hurt him in the polls and he'll stay the same, he'll just cruise, or, you know, perhaps the opposite happens and he'll get a bump because every other time that there was some scandal involving Trump and some controversy about some stupid thing he said, he always rose in the polls or he always had people who became bigger admirers of him after a gaffe, whether it's calling Mexicans rapists or saying we should ban all Muslims from entering the U.S., or saying we should bomb the families of ISIS, not ISIS, the families of ISIS, and all the trillion things that he said. So we have a new admirer. Now we have a new admirer after his fake Christian act the other day, And it happens to be the head of Liberty University. So Jerry Falwell Jr. Has something to say about Trump. He said, and I quote, "Donald Trump lives a life of loving and helping others, as Jesus taught." Donald Trump's a Jesus. And then also he goes on to compare him to Martin Luther King Jr. and his dad. Now, for those of you who don't know, this guy, Jerry Falwell Jr., his dad is obviously Jerry Falwell, and this guy is a famous, well-known preacher, I should say an infamous preacher, who kind of founded and started this political movement, the religious right, and it actually started because he was in favor of segregation. And he was also a big advocate of apartheid in South Africa. Just a really loathsome scumbag guy. But this guy, his son, is like, oh, Donald Trump is so amazing. He's so great, even though he's pretending to be Christian. He's like Jesus himself. He's like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He's like my dad. That makes no sense in a variety of different ways. So first of all, you can't say somebody's like MLK and your dad because they were opposites. In fact, Jerry Falwell denounced Martin Luther King. He spoke about that all the time. So it's just a contradiction here. But this is a classic case of if you can't beat him, join him. History proves MLK was right. The civil rights movement was right. Oh, yeah, no, totally. We were on their side all along. I mean, this is what my dad was fighting for, even though he was fighting for the opposite of it. And Donald Trump is like MLK and my dad and Jesus. Who compares Donald frickin' Trump to Jesus? Even if you like Donald Trump, as these guys clearly do, you can admit he ain't like Jesus. When you go by the message of Jesus, now yes, I understand in Christianity and in the Bible, it's mixed. You can find a backing for any message, whether it's genocide and slavery or it's kind, happy things and helping the poor and being liberal in many respects. But the Jesus of the New Testament, by and large, was a pacifist, was somebody who wanted to do nothing except help the poor, was kind to immigrants and refugees. Donald Trump stands for the polar opposite of that. He's like, no, I don't care. Donald Trump is great. Jesus is great. I'm just going to say they're both great, even though that makes no sense. But the reason why I bring you this story is because it highlights something that we've been speaking about for a while. And there was another great article about this the other day. I believe it was in The Guardian, where they said, no, you don't get it. The one thing that links Donald Trump to all of his supporters and the reason why he has such a fervent following is that, very simply, he's an authoritarian. And there are people in the country and just in the world who are looking for a strong leader, a guy who's arrogant and brazen and tells them they're cool and the other is bad. Once authoritarians find their leader, that's it. There's no, like, you throw any rational thought that they were even capable of beforehand, which is not that much to begin with, just throw it out the window. Because the mode of thinking is just us versus them. Good guy, bad guy. Black and white. No nuance, no gray, no nothing, no, hey, let's look at each individual claim and fact check it and see if sometimes he's right, sometimes he's wrong. No. This guy, Jerry Falwell Jr., looks at Donald Trump and he goes, that's it, leader, leader. I agree with him, now I will defend everything he's ever said, and oh yeah, he's like every good person who's ever lived that I adore. He's like Jesus, he's like MLK, he's like my dad, even though there's a contradiction there. So it's this gross black and white thinking where they're looking for a leader so they can shut off their mind and let this guy do whatever, and they just go into defense mode. Now, guys, say what you want about the problems on the left, and there are many. That's not how the left thinks. It's just not. I mean, the base on the left, we are the most critical of President Obama. We are the most critical of establishment Democrats. We'll give you breakdowns as to where exactly they're wrong. Flip the script, the base on the right, they're known for being the most loyal to whoever they fall in line behind. This is a historical truism between the right wing of the political spectrum and the left wing of the spectrum all around the world, throughout history. Now, obviously, there's a weird mix, and it's like the spectrum kind of meets at certain points when you have some kinds of Marxism and communism and fascism. They're very similar in many ways. It's an authoritarian left and an authoritarian right. But by and large, historically, this has more been a characteristic of the right, and it's this weird mindset that certain people fall into, where it's no longer about listening and being critical, turning on that critical part of your mind to say, that part wasn't exactly right. They've already decided, me like Trump. Therefore, nothing but praise for him, nothing but scorn for those who are against him, and just compare him to people who you think are great historical figures and say, he's like Jesus, he's like my God, and he's like MLK, and he's like my dad. Again, even though that makes no sense because one's a segregationist, one fought segregation. So there you have it. As I told you yesterday, go back and look at the segment, man. I said very simply, you think this is going to affect Donald Trump in a negative way when he goes into a super Christian university and says, 2 Corinthians over here, something like that. And Matt Thu, is this Matt Thu, Luke K? Oh, it's Luke. The name of the Bible is Luke, this book of the Bible. Doesn't matter what the fuck he says, whatever he says, they're going to say, yes, I like you, I love you, because they already have their mind made up, because that's how authoritarians work. There's another great example of this, too, by the way. Another great example of this was a study that asked people about George W. Bush and the Iraq War and all these different things. They found that Republicans were much more willing to just ignore reality and assert that something was true because they heard it, even when they're told it's not true. So, no, Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Okay, but it turns out that's not true. There's no evidence of that. Yeah, but he had weapons of mass destruction. Okay, no, we're saying that's not true. No, but he had weapons of mass destruction. So they'll just keep repeating it because they heard it, because somebody who they view as a father figure said it, and then fact checks don't matter. There was another poll which found that people who watch Fox News know less about the world than people who watch no news. It's because it's propaganda, and it's because of the authoritarian mindset, where the fact checks don't matter. Any counter evidence you give them somehow feeds their narrative that they already had. They work backwards from their conclusion. Counter them, what's the classic trick? Liberal bias. If you say anything that goes against any of their dear leaders, liberal bias, immediately dismissed. Well, it's easy to live in your bubble and to not grow as a person and learn more when you literally dismiss all criticism of you and your ideology and your people as liberal bias. Okay. Now, we go along to Goofball here in South Carolina, and let me tell you what he's up to. This is very Trumpy in this story. That's why we're doing it this early on in the show. A goofball South Carolina state representative proposed a bill that is the most obvious violation of the First Amendment I've ever seen. So Gawker explains here, quote, "You may remember State Representative Mike Pitts of South Carolina from his defeated efforts to keep the Confederate flag flying at the South Carolina State House last year. Well, now Pitts wants to establish a government-run responsible journalism registry to screen and approve reporters." Wow. Okay, so the bill is called the South Carolina Responsible Journalism Registry Law, which is very Orwellian of him. Orwell would be proud. And you can face a fine or even jail time for incompetent reporting under the bill. Incompetent reporting. So you get punished, quote, "if the person has demonstrated a reckless disregard of the basic codes and canons of professional journalism associations, including a disregard of truth, accuracy, objectivity, impartiality, fairness, and public accountability as applicable to the acquisition of newsworthy information and its subsequent dissemination to the public." Okay. This is a very, very long way and a fancy way of describing the basic principle of, if me no likey, me throw you in jail. That's what they're saying. Because look at what they say. They say, if you do something as a journalist or a reporter that demonstrates a disregard of truth, accuracy, objectivity, impartiality, fairness, and public accountability, well, then you're violating the law. But that leads to the logical question, who determines that? Who would determine objectivity, accuracy, impartiality, fairness in journalism? I don't know if you guys know this, but there are people who exist in the world who say the Daily Caller and WorldNet Daily are the most objective, fair, and accurate sites there are. And then there are also people on the flip side who say, you know, MoveOn.org and Daily Kos and different sites like that, they represent the most objective, accurate, fair strand or strain of journalism. So in order to determine this, you would have to quite literally set up a government body, and then the government body would determine whether or not something falls into these guidelines. I don't want the government deciding that. And I certainly don't want the guy who vehemently argued in favor of the Confederate flag to stay up to determine that. I mean, think about how silly this is. If you go up to this guy and you say, hey, man, look, I'm not buying your heritage, not hate argument about the flag. I'm not buying the it's my culture, it's my heritage, it's about my forefathers, it's not about racism, it's not about bigotry, it's not about intolerance. If he makes that argument, you could just say to him, look, I don't buy that. I don't think that's objective. I think you're being a subjective prick, and you're doing all these rationalizations to try to get to the place where you want to be. What would he say to you? He'd say, no, you're doing that. You're the one that's not objective. I'm just telling you the historical reality about the Confederate flag. It's tied to racism and bigotry. The people in the Confederacy fought to uphold slavery. He would say, no, you're not being objective by saying that. And under this law, if you write an article about that, well, he might be able to say, that's nice. Now get in the jail cell. I disagree with your article. We're going to pull it down and get in the jail cell. Oh, my goodness. Stalin would be so proud of this. This from the small government people. The small government people want to set up a government body, a government agency, to determine what is objective and fair in journalism. My ass. And furthermore, there's an embedded problem here, too. There's an inherent problem with if you set it up like this. Naturally, whatever the goals are of the government, they're going to bias their decisions in that direction. So if there's real hard-hitting investigative journalism and reporting about corruption within the South Carolina government or, you know, a problem that they were directly responsible for, the government was responsible for, they're not – obviously they get that case in front of them. They're going to say, yeah, let's take this one and put it over here because we meant well and you're attacking us too harshly, but we meant well, so therefore we're going to say this is not fair, so get in a jail cell. You know who would love this law? Donald Trump. We did the story the other day about how the Washington Post was like, we're going to run with that story about how you bankrupted the Taj Mahal and were horrible at business because you claim you're so great at business. We're going to run that story. He's like, if you run it, I'm going to sue you. And I'm going to sue you, and the goal isn't even necessarily to win. It's just to try to bankrupt you, try to make you spend a lot of money in court so that you learn your lesson and you don't do it again. Imagine a guy like Donald Trump had this capability. He was given the green light. Go ahead and do this. We'd live in a police state. We live in an authoritarian state, totally, through and through. But the good news is, of course, this would never, ever, ever get through any federal court. It would get struck down immediately. This violates the basic tenets of the First Amendment, which leads to the final irony, which is the same people who scream about, oh, Constitution's not debatable, man, let me tell you right now, this guy literally made arguments about the Second Amendment for guns in South Carolina. It's not debatable, Constitution, man. It's Constitution. Got to move along. Can't debate that. It's not a matter of opinion. All of a sudden, the First Amendment, when they don't like it, when it's inconvenient for them, well, that one is debatable. The First Amendment is debatable. Second Amendment, not so much. And then also, let's be clear, they have a historically inaccurate interpretation of the Second Amendment. But it's funny how they cry about the Constitution when they think it's convenient for their argument. But then when they dislike it, well, put that aside. We don't give a shit. Same with the Republicans at the federal level. Marco Rubio screaming about the Constitution when it comes to the Second Amendment. What about the Fourth Amendment, protection from unreasonable search and seizure? He doesn't believe in that at all. He's one of the biggest NSA cheerleaders there are. He's in favor of them doing a warrantless spying on you. What about the Eighth Amendment, protection from cruel and unusual punishment? He ain't against that. He's in favor of Guantanamo, an extrajudicial prison which violates habeas corpus and due process all day long. It's hypocrisy through and through. And furthermore, ideas like this are just stupid. Okay, next. There was a recent scientific, let me try that again. Spelling mistake. There was recent scientific research that claimed diet beverages, so diet sodas specifically, could be better than water in helping people lose weight. I mean, that seems like a bullshit claim on the face of it, and shocker, it indeed is a bullshit claim. It turns out that the research was backed by Coca-Cola and Pepsi. RT explains here, the 14-page research paper led by Peter Rogers, professor of biological psychology at Bristol University, appeared in the International Journal of Obesity in November. It claimed that people who consume diet drinks could be more likely to lose weight than those who drink water. Later, however, some curious details about the study appeared. The research was funded by the International Life Sciences Institute, whose members include drink giants Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. They continue, the Sunday Times has also reported that some of the authors of the study received around $1,070 each from the task force. The discoveries resulting from the research were also contrary to previous studies of diet drinks. While over 5,500 papers were reviewed for the study, the results were drawn from only three of them. Okay, this is an incredible story because it shows you how brazen and in your face corruption can be. Because there are 5,500 research papers on this topic. Only three of them said, yeah, if you drink Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi, that'll help you lose weight more than water. And it turns out that those studies were funded by Pepsi and Coca-Cola. Note that you can't do that. You can't do that. That is, by definition, not objective. There's a conflict of interest there. And your conclusions are absurd. You shouldn't even need a study. At face value, you should be able to reject it. Obviously, something that has more in it than just H2O is not going to help you lose weight more. How ridiculous is this? But guys, this shows you, and this is a lesson for every other area too, this shows you the corrupting influence of money and what happens when you let it into areas where it shouldn't be. When it comes to, you know, peer-reviewed studies, the funding should be from an objective source. It shouldn't be from somebody who's biased for the study to come out one way or the other way. By the same token, when you look at the research on climate science, why would anybody trust any research that's funded by ExxonMobil or Chevron or BP or any oil companies or fossil fuel companies, fracking companies, whatever? Why would you trust that? They have a conflict of interest. They have an incentive to fund these studies as long as the studies say what they want to hear, which is, oh, don't worry, it's not a big deal. Or, hey, it needs more study, but go ahead, keep fracking. Go ahead, keep selling that oil. Don't worry, climate change, greenhouse gas emissions, forget it. It's the same thing for that. And it happened with tobacco, too. Everybody looks back now. We go, oh, my God, how stupid were we? But there was a time, people don't remember this, where the same arguments were made about cigarettes causing cancer. There's, you know, tapes of people in Congress, one by one, saying, I don't know if there is conclusive evidence that indeed cigarettes do cause cancer. I'm not a medical expert. And then they move along and everybody says it. That's the effect of money. Now we look back and we go, oh, my God, how could we have ever fallen into the trap of this deceptive lobbying and all the tactics they use and the fake science they use, how they fund it to get the answer they want? Well, we got to be smart about this moving forward, not even just in science areas. Also, when it comes to conflicts of interest, just in the government in general, this is the problem of money in politics. I mean, it's not a coincidence that 80%+ of the American people are in favor of a minimum wage increase and we haven't gotten it. That's not a coincidence. You want to know why we haven't gotten it? The only people in the country who are against it are the ones funding the politicians' campaigns. The big multinational corporations who don't want an increase in the minimum wage to make it a living wage, they're the ones who are giving money to Democrats and Republicans so they can win their races. So obviously those people are more likely to represent the people who paid them than a random grandma in Cleveland who they never met in their life. This is the problem with corruption. This is the problem with a conflict of interest. It prevents the integrity of the work from coming through. It prevents something from being what it's supposed to be. The government is supposed to be of, by, and for the people. It's supposed to be a constitutional republic and a representative democracy, where they do what we want as long as it doesn't violate the Constitution. But we don't have that now. Now we have an oligarchy and a kleptocracy and a plutocracy because the government is run by billionaires and multinational corporations who set the agenda. And here you can see it, even when it comes to something like diet, you have people with a vested interest in getting whatever answer they want, funding the research to get the answer they want. And then even in the face of a meta-analysis that says, hey, 5,500 papers were done on this, only three of them say Diet Coke makes you lose more weight than water, they still double down because they contacted them about this. They're like, yeah, no, we stand by the research. What do you mean you stand by this? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. 5,500 studies, three of them say Diet Coke helps you lose weight more than water, and those were funded by Coke and Pepsi. There's no question here. But they'll try to make you believe the unbelievable because that's the point. That's the purpose. They've corrupted these things with these intentions and this goal in mind. So you have to look at all this stuff with a skeptical eye because the truth is there. You just have to dig to find it. Let's take a break. When we come back, our buddy David Pakman goes after Bill O'Reilly, and then we have a drone protester who's now in jail. Oh, boy. Wait till I give you that story. Stay right there, guys.
They've been warped in. My house to look like it's been lived in. My car to look like a coffin. It's been driven off a cliff. My career
like a non-stop graveyard shift.
Don't clean the crime scene because time means money. Don't need Vaseline when my eyes seem bloody. I see dead people, but who doesn't? We walk undercover, deadpan blended in with other human puppets. Discussing nothing but the sports and weather. I stare long enough, they all walk together. And then I freak out. Here's slow my cover, so much keep out. I'm on the road to recovery, no GPS. Voice in my sails till the sea breeze rests. Somewhere if you wanna play a hate. Day to day I use my fear. I'm falling asleep to stay awake. I appear psychic like, but I'm not a psychic. You're just predictable with no fight left to fight it. If you write it, they will come with a red pen and taser gun. Do something. I like for my shoes to look like they've been walked in. My house to look like it's been lived in. My car to look like a coffin. Been driven off a cliff, my career. I tip through the ashes in search of survivors. Digging up the earth, filling urns with dirt for what it's worth. I'm richer than the cemetery soil. Use land drilling to get my midnight oil. I've been moonlighting as a shade dreamer. I'm at the wheel of an ace. Hey, 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 Mr. Gatekeeper. Call me Keymaster. No, homeowner. One, two, and to the three, and to the foreclosure. They said the war was over, but we knew it wasn't. They wanted more soldiers.
Guys, want to hear something funny? I was going through this entire week thinking it was my birthday this weekend. It's not. Apparently, I'm just really, really, really bad at math. My birthday's January 31st, and for whatever reason, I thought this was the week of my birthday, and this weekend was my birthday. It's not. Of course, it's next weekend. I'm an idiot, is the moral of the story. It's a random thought here. Just letting you know my giant gaps that occur in my brain. All right, let's go on over to Bill O'Reilly here and our buddy who covered him pretty good here. Our buddy David Pakman from the David Pakman Show called out the hypocrisy and ignorance of Bill O'Reilly on international politics. Let's watch.
Bill O'Reilly, who is very proud of his Irish roots, has threatened to move to Ireland if Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders is elected president of the United States. He doesn't want anything to do with democratic socialism. Here's what Bill actually said. If Bernie Sanders gets elected president, I'm fleeing. I'm going to Ireland, and they already know it. I shouldn't say it publicly because that will get Sanders more votes, but I'm not going to pay 90% of my income to that guy. I'm sorry, I'm not doing it. Bill O'Reilly clearly has no idea what Ireland is like today, and if he's trying to avoid democratic socialism in the United States, Ireland is not the place that he should be going. Number one, the top marginal tax rate currently in Ireland is higher than here in the United States. Number two, even if Bill O'Reilly moved to Ireland, current rules wouldn't allow him to avoid U.S. taxes anyway. You still have to pay American taxes, even if you, renounce your citizenship. You arguably still owe some taxes to the United States, although some people would say that they just wouldn't pay them. But the idea that he's going to avoid any U.S. taxes by going to Ireland is not by any means etched in stone. Gun control. Ireland is way tougher on gun control than the United States. Bill O'Reilly has talked many times about his love for the First Amendment and his right to protect himself. It is going to be pretty tough to get guns in Ireland because they are highly restricted. Many cops don't even carry firearms in Ireland. And then here's the really big one, Lewis. Socialized medicine. Ireland has socialized medicine. This is the type of thing Bernie Sanders wants. Bill O'Reilly seems to know very little about Ireland.
Oh, that's so sad. It's so sad because it just shows you in such a clear way that he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, man. Bill O'Reilly is clueless. And you see this oftentimes with different characters on the right who will say, hey, if this Democrat wins this election or whatever, well, you know, I'm going to leave the country. But anywhere you would want to go is more socialist than the United States. Because, let's be honest, they only want to go to other white places. And the other white places are more socialist. So they might say, yeah, I'm going to go to Canada. Okay, way more socialist than the U.S. Way more socialist. Yeah, all right, well, I'm out there. I'm going to go to Britain. Yet again, way more socialist. They have universal health care. They have a higher marginal tax rate. Then they might say Australia, same thing. You go down the list. Just the other nations that they would consider fleeing to, they're more like social democracies. On the scale in the U.S., we are the furthest to the right. In terms of course, we have socialism like every modern country, some degree or another of it, police, fire department, military, some infrastructure spending, Medicare, you know, you name it, some things. But we're the furthest to the right on the spectrum. We are the most capitalistic of the mixed market economies. So he doesn't know what he's talking about. And then furthermore, the 90% number is just, It's not true. Now, David explained this in a pretty clear way as well in a different part of the video. But 90%, he said repeatedly in multiple interviews, like, no, I'm not in favor of that. I don't know where that came from. And also, he released a specific tax plan just this week, I think. And the top rate for those who make, it was either over $2 million or $5 million. It was 52%. And again, that's a marginal rate, not a regular rate. So a marginal rate is everything you make over a certain number is taxed at that rate. So when they say, hey, the top rate for what you make over $5 million is 52%, well, then that means that let's say you make $6 million. Your first $5 million is taxed at the lower rate, and then everything above $5 million, so that last $1 million is taxed at 52%. And then usually, let's be clear, that doesn't even include loopholes and deductions and stuff like that. So the effective rate will probably be lower, and it would be something like 40%, which is what it was in the U.S. when our top marginal rate under Eisenhower was 94%. So he's not this idea that he's some sort of loony, crazy person, this communist, this uber socialist. It's just not the case. As I said time and time again, talk to somebody from Sweden. Talk to somebody from Denmark. Talk to somebody from Scandinavia. They'll be like, no, the dude is a centrist, man. The dude is very, very centrist. And for the record here, I actually agree with Bernie in that respect. You know, I'm an international centrist or a Scandinavian centrist. It's just that in the context of the U.S., he appears to be uber far left. But actually, to be fair to O'Reilly here, he's not the most unreasonable dude on guns. I mean, I'm sure that he's to the right of most lefties, but he has said that there should be, I don't know if it was a gun registry or just universal background checks, but his rhetoric on that is more reasonable. But either way, I mean, David's 100% right in calling out his ignorance here, because the reality is he talks about politics day in and day out, the number one show on TV, news show on TV, and he just doesn't know what he's talking about. He's clueless. He has no clue that all these other places that he would consider fleeing to, Ireland being on the top of the list, that they are way more socialist than the United States of America. Let's go to these goofballs in Oregon. You know, I want to know what I had for lunch. I'm going to tell you anyway. I don't know why I bothered to throw in that you know, prior thing. I didn't have time to really have anything, so I was like, okay, let me grab the nearest thing. Brilliant idea. Grab some peanut butter, okay, and put a little whipped cream on top. It's like a dessert, but it's fucking delicious. A little bit of peanut butter, a little bit of whipped cream on top. And then watch, you have like, I don't know, it took only like three spoonfuls, and I was like, oh my God, I'm full. I don't know what it is, man. Certain things are filling to me, whether peanut butter is one thing. Another thing, I don't know how you guys are with this, but whenever it's baked goods, like cake and stuff like that, it fills me up immediately. Whereas fried food, I could just eat all day, and it never fills me up, and I could just keep eating it until I die. Which I'm probably going to end up doing here, for the record. But it's weird how that works, because I've spoken to people where it's the opposite. I've also spoken to people where, you know, obviously their love would be baked goods, and they don't like fried food that much, or it's lower on the list. My number one, I'm a fried food guy to death. Like, that's what really gets me. That's the guilty pleasure. Baked goods, I could do without, you know. If I go for a few weeks, a month, whatever, not having baked goods, whatevs, bro. I don't need cupcakes in my life. But you try to take away some fried food from me, well, now we got a problem. Now there might be a war. I don't know how we got off on this topic. All right, let's go after these crazy people in Oregon. For those of you who don't know, there's still a right-wing patriot group that's in control of a government building in Oregon. They set up shop there, and they said that they plan on not leaving until they get what they want. What exactly do they want? Nobody fucking knows. They were angry over a situation involving ranchers who set their own land on fire when they weren't allowed to, and then their fire spread over onto government property. They did that twice, so they're facing a jail term. Perhaps they're spending too much time in jail. Forgive me, I don't remember the exact number of years, but I do remember thinking, yeah, that's a little too much. But either way, this isn't how you handle it. The way they handle it is, okay, let's go take our guns and take over a government building by force. And they're still there. They've been there for, you know, a while now, a few weeks, right? At least something like that. So the response from officials has been interesting because they basically decided, let's give them enough rope to hang themselves. Now, I should note here for the record, I don't think they would take this approach if it was an armed black group that took it over. People have been tweeting me stories of what happened when a black group tried to do something similar. Naturally, it ended up with the thing burning to the ground and the government going in with force. I don't think they would act this way if it was some kind of Muslim group that had even, let's say, the exact same political issue concerned them. They had somebody who was locked up for a reason, a property dispute with the government. If Muslims who were armed took over a government building, it wouldn't fucking end in this way. But either way, you know, you could have a debate as to whether or not this is the right way across the board, whether it's a black person, a Muslim group, or a right-wing group where, you know, they're like, okay, we're going to take over a government building by force. The government decided, okay, we don't think they're that much of a threat, so just let them keep breaking laws, and then we're going to keep this running tally on them, and all this stuff is going to hold up in court. So when this does come to an end, we'll just, you know, it's over. They're going to get locked up immediately. So perhaps that is the right strategy, because these guys are just really, really fucking themselves. Like, there's video now of these guys tearing down fences on government property. You can't do that, you idiots. That's tearing down government property. You're, you know, that's against the law, among the many other things that they're doing. So we learned last time we spoke about these guys that their leader, Ayman Bundy, who is the son of Cliven Bundy, who was the notorious moocher rancher in Nevada, who didn't pay over $1 million in grazing fees, and then he wanted to keep mooching off the state, and so there was a standoff with the feds. His son took a $500,000 government loan for his business, as he pretends like he's a crusader in favor of small government. Okay, you believe in small government? Give back all that money, apologize, and let's move along here. Oh, you don't want to do that because the government, socialism for you is good. It's just for those icky black people and Democrats. For them, no, here's some fucking bootstraps. But we have even more hypocrisy today. So today we learn this, quote, Arizona rancher Lavoy Finicum. I love how they all have, like, funny right-wing names. Arizona rancher Lavoy Finicum told Oregon Public Broadcasting that his four current foster children have been removed while he's in Oregon. He's a cattle rancher who raises these kids, but he admitted, quote, he barely breaks even on the cattle, and the loss of 50 extra foster ranch hands' children is going to make it financially difficult, he said. That was my main source of income. My ranch, well, the cows just cover the costs of the ranch. Oh, that is precious. Here you have a guy who's so upset about big government and their tyranny, and they're getting in our life in every which way. And naturally, he's like, look at these moochers taking money from the government. Look at these parasites. How dare they? Leeches. What does he do? He's like, yeah, I don't even make money from my ranching. I take in foster kids and just get a welfare check. Oh, my God, stop with your hypocrisy. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing their ability to compartmentalize this stuff. On one side of their brain, they're like, small government through and through, get the stinking feds off my back. Everybody should grab some bootstraps. You know, we hate the tyranny and overreach. And then on the other side of their brain, they're like, all right, how can I leech off people? How can I be a parasite? How can I get my way? And if times that means exploiting big government, I'll indeed do that. Now, to be clear, with this character, we don't know if it's money from the government. We know that Catholic charities have paid over $100,000 to him. But I love how he thinks, like, okay, no, this is a job. It's not a job. The charity is literally doing charity for you. And you think that's like, no, that's my main source of income. I mooch off the Catholic charities as a business strategy. That's not the point of those charities existing. So yet again, we have another layer of hypocrisy. These guys are clowns. We'll see how this ends, man, but I think they have sufficiently destroyed themselves by all the evidence they've piled up against them. I love how people have now sent them dildos in the mail and a whole bunch of lube to go along with that, and they're just being trolled. Everybody's calling them Y'al-Qaeda, Vanilla ISIS, Yoko Haram. I actually, believe it or not, I think it's a little unfair then, because the real Y'al-Qaeda and Yoko Haram is like Dylan Roof and the KKK and perhaps neo-Nazis. And like, they're actual really violent right-wing groups. So, and these guys are, what they did is violent, no doubt about that, but they haven't killed anybody yet. I think that when this ends, they'll be spending a long time in jail, as they should, where they could dwell on their hypocrisy behind bars. Okay, now, let's go to the drone protester who's now in jail. The Huffington Post is reporting that a peace activist who was protesting drones at an airbase has been sentenced to 6 months in jail. Now, we discussed her case over a year ago. She appealed her decision at the time, and she lost. So at the time, she got a year in jail. I think she spent some time, then appealed, and then now she lost. She was able to get her sentence cut a little bit. Now she's spending 6 months in jail. I believe the time before was supposed to be a year. But either way, she's going to jail. So let me give you some detail on the story here. They say Marianne Grady Flores, a grandmother of three from Ithaca, New York, was found guilty in 2014 of violating a protection order that barred her and other activists from going near Colonel Earl Evans and his workplace. The charges against Grady Flores, a Catholic involved with the upstate New York coalition to ground the drones and end the wars, stem from a nonviolent protest over the military's use of drones at the Hancock base in February 2013, when she and eight others were arrested and charged with violating the protective order. Grady Flores insists she did not intend to flout the court, testifying at her trial that she accidentally stepped on the base property while taking photos of the protest. Nevertheless, a jury convicted her of second-degree criminal contempt in 2014, and she was later sentenced to a year in jail. In July 2014, she was released on bail pending an appeal in which she argued the protection order was unconstitutional and vague and that there was insufficient evidence to convict. Her lawyer said the following. This was her argument. There is a requirement that there be an act of violence or intimidation against the protected party or at minimum an articulable risk of safety involving the witness. There is no such risk here, nor can the prosecution claim that the defendant was abusive or threatening to Colonel Evans in any manner. Now, despite that argument, which I think is fairly airtight, I think it's a totally logical argument, she lost. So this is a disaster, and it's a disaster for a variety of reasons, but most importantly, the precedent it sets. Because basically what's happened here is they found a free speech loophole where if you're protesting something that the government doesn't approve of, then they can get some kind of order to keep you X amount of feet away from them, okay? And then if you go and protest and you get within, you know, that circle, even by an inch, well, now you're going to go to jail for about a year. All right, I don't like that because this looks like something that, you know, anybody can exploit for political reasons across the board. And if you really want to think about how screwed up the system is today, consider this. She's in jail for protesting the use of drones. Meanwhile, we have drone operators who admit to killing children who are not in jail. That tells you a little something about the how screwed up the system is. And for the record here, I'm actually consistent on this in the sense that even if it's a political issue that I disagree with, I wouldn't be in favor of taking them, locking them up, giving, you know, having some sort of orders against them where they have to stay away from you a certain amount. And to prove my point here, even when it was the case about abortion protesters, where they wanted to make it, I forget how big the zone was, but it was a pretty big zone. Like, you can't come within hundreds of feet of the abortion clinic that you're protesting if you're anti-abortion. I was against that. I said, look, man, as much as I disagree with these people, they have a right to voice their opinion, and the previous courts have ruled that there's an inherent protective zone around people, this bubble of security as you walk, where obviously protesters cannot get physical with you. If you're somebody going into an abortion clinic, like, they're not allowed to touch you if you don't want them touching you. They're not allowed to get in your face and stay there if you don't want them to be there. So there's an inherent little area right around them that they can't go into. But this idea that, no, you now have to go 300 feet that way, that's bullshit. That's bullshit, and it's bullshit no matter what the issue is, even if I disagree with the protesters. Because in this case, look, it's being used against people who are on the right side of an issue, who are against wars and drones killing innocent people. They say, no, oh, you stepped an inch onto our property. You're not allowed to do that because of this order that you can't threaten this dude who you weren't threatening, so now you're going to go to jail. No. This is clearly a loophole that we need to reverse this decision, because if we don't, there's going to be a war on free speech and protests across the board here of all different political stripes. All right, now let me give you a story about the British Empire, which is amazing. What a story this is. I read the article yesterday and my jaw was on the ground. The Independent has a stunning article about how the British public feels about their past empire and what was actually done during that empire. So YouGov found that, quote, 44% were proud of Britain's history of colonialism, while only 21% regretted that it happened, and 23% held neither view. The same poll also asked about whether the British Empire was a good thing or a bad thing. 43% said it was good, while only 19% said it was bad, and 25% responded that it was neither. Okay, so unfortunately, there's this feeling, this sentiment, my guess is among the conservatives in Britain of, come on, those were the good old days, weren't they? Yeah, I don't think they were the good old days for the people who you were subjugating and the people who, you know, you forced to do stuff. So I didn't know all that much about the British Empire, to be honest with you guys. You know, I knew a little bit. I have a degree in political science. I hope I know something about it. I did, but not as much as I should. And then this article here in The Independent really broke it down for me, and my jaw was on the ground as I was going through it. So what exactly was the British Empire? Well, they explain here, quote, at its height in 1922, the British Empire governed a fifth of the world's population and a quarter of the world's total land area. Okay, so that's quite powerful. And there was the old saying, the sun never sets on the British Empire. I mean, obviously it did, but either way, that was immensely powerful at the time. So what did they do to get and maintain that territory? Quote, during the Second Boer War, 1899 to 1902, the British rounded up around a sixth of the Boer population, mainly women and children, and detained them in camps which were overcrowded and prone to outbreaks of disease with scant food rations. Of the 107,000 people interned in the camps, 27,927 Boers died, along with an unknown number of black Africans. Okay, so that's not good. We're already starting off here with camps. Let me give you more. When peaceful protesters defied a government order and demonstrated against British colonial rule in Amritsar, India, on the 13th of April in 1919, inside walled gardens and fired upon by Gurkha soldiers. The soldiers, under the orders of Brigadier Reginald Dyer, kept firing until they ran out of ammunition, killing between 379 and 1,000 protesters and injuring another 1,100 within 10 minutes. And get this, Brigadier Dyer was later lauded a hero by the British public, who raised 26,000 euros for him as a thank you. It seems like, you know, I'm not the smartest guy here, but just a straightforward interpretation of this would be systemic violence. Like, the whole point of it was that. Okay, then we have the partitioning of India. Quote, in 1947, Cyril Radcliffe was tasked with drawing the border between India and the newly created state of Pakistan over the course of a single lunch. After Cyril Radcliffe split the subcontinent along religious lines, uprooting over 10 million people, Hindus in Pakistan and Muslims in India were forced to escape their homes as the situation quickly descended into violence. Some estimates suggest to 1 million people lost their lives in the sectarian killings. Okay, now unfortunately, this has been Western imperialism 101. It's not just Britain that does this. The U.S. was known to do it as well. We did it a lot in the Middle East, man. We went in and drew up countries. They were fake countries. And then as a result of that, you inflamed sectarian tensions that were largely under wraps. Now, the sentiment was already there, so you can't blame the West for the sentiment. But you can blame them for riling it up by drawing the fake borders, splitting up the resources to create a power struggle, and then bringing to the surface those sectarian tensions. So Iraq is another example of this. I believe Iraq became a country in the 1930s, and it was just lines drawn on a map by the West for oil purposes, And you had the Sunnis and the Shias and the Kurds like, we don't like them, they don't like us, what the fuck's happening here? Then you need a strong man to be put in place to control everything. And it is outside meddling that fucks with these places and then eventually leads to further conflict down the road. This is history, we need to acknowledge it. All right, more. Then there's the infamous Mau Mau Uprising. Quote, members of the Kyukyu tribe were detained in camps since described as Britain's gulags or concentration camps, where they alleged they were systematically tortured and suffered serious sexual assault and rape. Estimates of the deaths vary widely. Historian David Anderson estimates there were 20,000, whereas Carolyn Elkins believes up to 100,000 could have died. And then finally, so there's your British concentration camps. Not many people know about those. And finally, we have this atrocity in India. Quote, between 12 and 29 million Indians died of starvation while it was under the control of the British Empire, as millions of tons of wheat were exported to Britain as famine raged in India. In 1943, up to 4 million Bengalis, they continue, were starved to death when Winston Churchill diverted food to British soldiers and countries such as Greece while a deadly famine swept through Bengal. Talking about the Bengal famine in 1943, Churchill said the following, I hate Indians. They are a beastly people with a beastly religion. The famine was their own fault for breeding like rabbits. Oh, sweet Jesus. Oh, sweet Jesus. So this is unbelievable stuff, man. And look at the irony there. Look at these beasts. Look at these savages. They're the bad guys. As you're literally jacking their food supply to feed you and your buddies, who happen to be white, when the Indians aren't white. So you're stealing their shit. They're starving to death. You're like, you guys are savages. Wouldn't you be the savage for stealing their shit as they starve? And then besmirching them and smearing them. Beastly people, savages, give me more of your shit. No, you would be the savage in that case. Again, unbelievable. So I tell you this for a few reasons. I go through this article with you guys for a few reasons. Number one, it's factual, it's history, and I didn't know it, and I didn't know it in detail, and we should. People should acknowledge this. And number two, the poll numbers of the people in Britain show that everybody is guilty to one extent or another of going softer on their own tribe, okay? And we have to stop that. Everybody has to stop that. You know, if you're somebody in America like myself, first and foremost, we should go after our government because I control my government. I have a say in my government, and it's my tax dollars funding my government. So I don't want a penny of my money going to bombing innocent people in the Middle East, so I'm going to fight against that. We have to go after our own tribe. In Britain, you know, they look through rosy glasses at what happened with the British Empire. Don't! That was a bad time, okay? Say, what we did was fucked up. British concentration camps, stealing people's food as there's a famine going on, it's fucked up. Let's acknowledge that. Let's police our own extremists. Okay, that doesn't mean you can't talk about extremists of the other. I mean, I'm talking about them in Britain. I'm not British. So, you know, there's that aspect of this. You're allowed to talk about extremism of all stripes, as we do. The other day we discussed... fundamentalism in Pakistan, where they fought against child marriage, Muslim fundamentalists. You could talk about all of it, but don't skip over your own tribe, because we all have this thing where it's easy to judge the other and blame the other and talk about how the other does evil shit. But it's much harder to go, all right, now let me tell you what's wrong in my country, with my tribe, with my group of people, and let me police this because I can directly affect this. Whereas with others, it's more just hot air. It's just me talking. Here, it's more action. I could talk about it, and I could do something about it quite literally because my government is supposed to, in theory, represent me. So people who are in the U.S. talk about U.S. crimes. People in Britain talk about crimes of Britain. People who are of different religions. If you're Jewish, bring up the ultra-Orthodox issue and how there's problems in the community. If you're Muslim, yeah, bring up the Muslim fundamentalist community. Talk about how there are problems in it. It's not that the good people of all the different countries and religions are guilty for what the bad people do, but it's just that the more we fight back against it, the better a world we create, and the more likely it is for our message to succeed and override the message of hatred and bigotry and dividing us. So everybody needs to go after their own extremists, because a lot of people have a blind spot when it comes to just their own extremists, and that's not okay. Okay, I got to take a break. When we come back, I'll have a bunch of stuff for you guys. Idaho has an insane state law where parents are allowed to substitute prayer as a form of medical treatment. I got to give you a story on that. And then we have an incredible story about a Christian rights group that fights for religious freedom. All of a sudden, they don't believe in religious freedom. I wonder why. All right, we'll talk about that and much more. Stay right there, guys.
I've been losing sleep, dreaming about the things that we could be. But baby, I've been praying hard. Said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars.
Hi guys, welcome back. Britain, man, the fuck was wrong with you guys? I mean, that isn't that an amazing story? I didn't know the details of it. The specifics are just mind blowing. That's what the, you know. The U.S. found a way to take colonialism, or not even colonialism, because that's not the right word, but take imperialism and upgrade it to the next level where it's harder to point out and spot, and then you get plausible deniability. So people, there are a lot of Americans who don't think we have an empire. We do have a fucking empire. Okay, we do. But they think we don't because of how we went about doing it. Sargon of Akkad made this point in the talk I had with him months ago now, where he was like, that's kind of the brilliance of it. And he just means brilliance – yesterday, yay, American Empire, just as a like a trick. It's a trick they did where instead of us going in, you know, to South America, for example, toppling governments, and then we stay there. No, we topple governments and then put people in power who are sympathetic to us, who are authoritarians, and who are willing to do our bidding and, you know, take the natural resources of their country and give it to us without us having to be there. So it's like you upgraded imperialism to the next level where it's harder to detect, where now there's plausible deniability and people could go, I don't think there's imperialism. And you go, what do you mean? We toppled this country and we put an authoritarian leader in there? And they could just be like, well, yeah, but the person's from that place. So you're not literally there. Our troops aren't literally there. Yeah, but we fund the army and the death squads that go around and suppress dissent and try to fight against democracy. That's not true. How do we know that's the case? We don't know that's the case. So when Britain passed the torch, we did some tweaks, and it wasn't as in your face, but of course there's still a tremendous amount of death and destruction that goes on. All right, now let me move on to some religious stuff here. Got plenty of that. So Idaho has an insane state law where parents are allowed to substitute prayer as a form of medical treatment for their kids. What could possibly go wrong? I don't know. So Raw Story explains here. It carves out a religious exemption to manslaughter, capital murder, and negligent homicide charges if those prayers go unanswered and the child dies. What an immensely terrible idea. So finally, somebody noticed how insane this is, and they're fighting to repeal it. A former Pentecostal Christian named Linda Martin is lobbying the state legislature to repeal the law. She's been for years, but she was defeated. Quote, a measure that would have limited the religious exemption was defeated following a string of preventable child deaths because Republican lawmakers said it would have violated their religious freedom. Representative Chris Perry said, children do die. I'm not trying to sound callous, but reformers want to act as if death is an anomaly, but it's not. It's a way of life. Wow. File that under one of the stupidest comments of the year so far. State Senator Lee Hader said, I believe the law is pretty straightforward. We would encourage them to seek medical care, but we don't force people to seek medical care. And whether it's because they can't afford it or, in this case, because of their heartfelt religious belief, we simply don't do that. Okay, well, let me be clear here. The parents don't have the right to withhold medical care from their kids who don't know any better and can't make a choice for themselves. So think about how perverted their reasoning is here. We need to stand up for the right of the parents to deny medical care to their kids who don't know any better and will probably die if they don't get it. I mean, this is the most backwards kind of thinking anybody can imagine. It's 2016. Enough, enough. No, I'm not going to give you a religious belief exemption for getting medical care for your kids and excuse negligent homicides if your prayers go unanswered. I have news for everybody. Your fucking prayers are going to go unanswered. Prayer does not work. It's not something that's going to cure cancer. It's not something that's going to, you know, find a way to defeat malaria. If you have a serious disease, if you have a medical problem that needs attention, go to the doctor. Go get medical attention. Just because you wish your voodoo would override it doesn't mean it's going to override it. And remember, guys, the issue is, if you're like a 57-year-old dude and you're just a crazy person and you're brainwashed by your religion and you don't want to go to the doctor when you're sick, whatever, that's your body, that's your decision. I disagree with you and you're wrong, but you can make that decision. When you're talking about your kids, no, bitch, now it's an issue for the state to get involved and to say, you don't have a choice. You bring your kid to the doctor. When they're old enough, if they want to make up their own mind to do what doesn't work, faith healing, that's fine, but they ain't old enough yet. And you shouldn't take your mysticism and impose it on your kids. Then you're taking away your kids' rights. Guys, it's not something that's up in the air. It's not something that's a matter of opinion. Maybe prayer will work this time to cure this terrible virus that we contracted. No, it's not going to work any more than sprinkling goat blood in the corner of your house and doing a rain dance is going to fucking work. You know, you might as well be praying to the Roman gods or the Greek gods or tribal gods of the jungle. You might as well speak in tongues. This stuff is not going to work. We know what does work with certain illnesses. Modern medicine has advanced pretty far. So you shouldn't be allowed to just say no because religion. This is religion getting extra rights. Because imagine for a second you have a parent whose child gets sick. They're an atheist. They're secular. And they don't take them to the doctor when they're sick. And then the people are like, why the fuck didn't you take them? Your kid just died. Why didn't you take them? I don't know. I didn't feel like it. You didn't feel like it? Yeah, I don't know. I thought maybe they'd get better on their own. That's negligent homicide, or that's manslaughter. There's a crime there. But for some reason, if you just say, I believe in a space fairy, that's why. Oh, that's cool. No, they say they believe in the space fairies. What's the problem? There's no problem here. No, there is a problem. There is a direct conflict between science and religion. People want to say the opposite, but it's this politically correct bullshit fairy tale. It's what people want to be true because they don't want to offend people for holding certain beliefs. The reality is some things are empirically right, some things are empirically wrong. When it comes to science, there's not a competition between whether or not the people who believe in fairy tales or whether or not the guys in the white lab coats got it right. One of them has it right, one of them doesn't. We need to acknowledge that, and the law needs to reflect that. This is child abuse, and if your kid dies because you refuse them treatment for religious reasons, you are a criminal, and you should spend time in jail. And there was a case about this recently, which we spoke about, where parents didn't take their kid once, they got off. Their kid died, but they got off. You want to know what happened? They did it again. Another one of their kids got sick, died. That judge who let him off the first time, that motherfucker should be in jail too. The parents should be in jail, and the judge should be in jail for allowing such an absurdity to go by without making the proper decision. Okay. Next. The Independent is reporting that British three-year-olds have been told the non-Jews are evil in a kindergarten worksheet at ultra-Orthodox Jewish schools in North London. So they explain here, Emily Green, who used to teach at the school, now chairs an organization which supports ultra-Orthodox Jews who want to leave the community. She says, quote, it's not uncommon to be taught non-Jewish people are evil in ultra-Orthodox Jewish schools. It is part of the prayers, teachings, their whole ethos. Describing it as a form of indoctrination, she added, psychologically, you become so afraid of the world out there after being taught how dangerous and bad evil non-Jews are that it makes it harder to leave. The worksheet's first question reads, what have the evil goyim, which is a derogatory term for non-Jews, done with the synagogues and Jewish schools? The answer is then completed on the worksheet with, burn them. Another question asks, what did the goyim want to do with all the Jews? To which the answer, according to the worksheet, is, kill them. So it doesn't explicitly refer to the Holocaust. It's a document that's teaching, in their words, kindergartners to be very afraid and treat non-Jews very suspiciously because of what they did in the past. Quote, it's not a history lesson. It's a parable that is actively teaching the children extremism, hatred, and fear for the outside world. Okay. Unacceptable. This is the kind of stuff. It exists in Christianity. It exists in Islam. It exists in most religions, even religions that people say are more benign, and hey, the tenets of that religion are more peaceful than other religions, like Buddhism, for example. Even in Buddhism, it exists because you have the Rohingya Muslim population in Myanmar, viciously and brutally repressed by the Buddhist majority, and this has been widely reported on. So you have extremism and tribalism and fundamentalism. That is a cornerstone and a hallmark of the fundamentalist communities. In this case, it's an ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. Obviously, in Muslim fundamentalist communities, you have teachings about how the infidel are evil and, you know, you're better than them and they have whatever's coming to them. in fundamentalist Christian communities. You have high levels of anti-Semitism and racism. We've spoken about that before. The KKK was obviously a Christian organization, explicitly, and also super anti-Jewish and anti-black. The whole point was racism and intolerance and bigotry. So we got to beat back these ideas. We got to defeat these ideas because you're breeding generations that are going to, you know, cause more trouble. And they believe now, by definition, I'm the good guy, the other is the bad guy, therefore anything I do to them is okay, and they're really not even human. Dehumanization is one of the first steps on the road to genocide. And we can't have this. And guys, the answer really is, it's as simple as education and secular schools. I think the internet and entertainment really chip away at these fundamentalist mindsets too, because once you get a taste of, you know, cool Western TV with, you know, interesting characters and stuff, people go, oh, they're not all bad, are they? But secular schools and education, because if your home base, if your school is the place you go where you learn about tolerance and pluralism and multiculturalism and free speech rights and open-mindedness and due process and constitutional rights, if that's your home base and that's the default, from when you're a kid, you learn that, hey, different races, different religions, as long as we're tolerant, open-minded, it's all good. Well, then that's going to be your default position. Your default position is going to be, what do you mean? Why would I randomly hate non-Jews? Or why would I randomly hate Muslims or blacks or whatever? From when I was a kid, I was taught that that's the wrong thing to do, and I had people in my class who were Jewish, Muslim, black, Asian, whatever. So you need to have secular schools that don't do fundamentalist indoctrination into any of their religions, and you need to teach these principles from when they're young. Because I'm telling you, man, this leads to tremendous problems down the road, because you're going to have people who wholeheartedly believe in a different value system than Enlightenment values. I mean, and growing up in 2016, the idea that you teach kindergartners anything but Enlightenment values, that's absurd. I mean, we have science. We see what it's gotten us. We have technology. We see what it's gotten us. We have the idea of pluralism and tolerance and rights, free expression, free speech, all this stuff, freedom to protest. We have all this stuff. It's obvious that that fosters healthier societies in the sense that there's less damage done to other people domestically within those societies. Why would you not want to foster those ideals? But it seems like, whether it's ultra-Orthodox Jews or fundamentalist Muslims or fundamentalist Christians, it seems like when they're taught tribalism, we're good, they're bad, and, you know, they're less than human, it's almost like it's setting up for a war. It's setting up for violence and clashing down the road. And it's setting up for horrific political systems that are not secular and not enlightened. And this school, by the way, is they segregate the genders. The female teacher was like, yeah, I only taught the women. Obviously, don't allow me to teach the boys. Why are we okay with this? Why are we okay with this in any society? No, it's not okay. It's not debatable. It's not just different if you have a society that treats women inferior and segregates them. No, it's just wrong. And your idea is just stupid. Your idea does not make any sense. Women should have equal rights, and they should have the ability under the law to do whatever men want, to do whatever they want, even if men do it. That's what I should say. That's the way to phrase it. So this is unacceptable, and this is something that we need to fight back against. And the idea is secular education and entertainment and chipping away at this ideology which brainwashes them. Okay. Next. The European Union unanimously adopted a resolution criticizing Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. The Guardian reports, the resolution emphasized that EU agreements with Israel applied only to the State of Israel within the pre-1967 border, adding that the EU must unequivocally and explicitly indicate their inapplicability to the territories occupied by Israel in 1967. So they go on to say, this does not constitute a boycott of Israel, which the EU strongly opposes. That's their words, not mine. The EU will continue to closely monitor developments on the ground and their broader implications and will consider further action in order to protect the viability of the two-state solution, which is constantly eroded by new facts on the ground. Okay, so in my opinion, this is a step in the right direction in the sense that the EU, and at other times it's been the international community, acknowledges, continued occupation is not a solution. It's not okay. It's not a 50-50 thing. It's wrong. And since it's wrong, we're going to try to take steps within reason that denounce that and hope to push us in the other direction. Now, having said that, I will admit, I don't think this goes far enough. I think that if you really, really wanted change, if you really wanted a two-state solution, and you wanted to bring it about ASAP, there's a pretty easy way to do it, which is go all the way and say, you know what, yeah, boycott. Now, there is one legitimate criticism of not the EU, but the international community, the United Nations, where people say, come on, man, like all you do is beat up on Israel, and there are other nations that have tremendous humanitarian issues that, you know, you don't condemn them nearly as much. That's true. So I would, for example, Saudi Arabia is on the UN Human Rights Panel, which is ridiculous. They're a Salafi state. They're a terror state. So I would definitely condemn the fuck out of them and everybody else who's doing human rights abuses, and there are plenty to go around. But that doesn't mean that the criticisms of Israel are not valid. Indeed, oftentimes they are. So to criticize occupation is rational, is legitimate, is objective in my view. If you want long-term peace and stability, it's going to come with a two-state solution. It's going to come with recognition of a Palestinian state at the international level as well. And right now we simply don't have that. We have continued occupation. So what I would do is, if I was in the EU or if I was in the UN or whatever, I would say, no, why don't we try to force them into a two-state deal? Netanyahu ain't going to do it willingly. He's proven that time and time and time again. He contradicts himself every 17 minutes. I want a Palestinian state. LOL, JK, no, I don't. I really want one, though, seriously. No, we can never give them. Not under me, never a Palestinian state. So, okay, you want to play this game? Let's play this game. Let's go all in on BDS. And I've told you guys before, I support BDS because it worked. It worked when it came to apartheid South Africa. If you wanted peace and you wanted to bring about a solution for long-term stability, you got to force them to the table. When you put sanctions on a government like that, they'll sit down at the table, and all of a sudden they're willing to listen when they're hurt economically. I'm not in favor of violence against Israel. I'm not in favor of violence, period. What I'm in favor of is a productive solution, and if that means putting pressure on you and doing boycotts, divestments, and sanctions in order to do that, I am going to do that. And then, by the way, as I've argued from day one, let's say Israel does this. Let's say we do BDS. Israel feels the economic pressure. They're like, okay, we're ready to sit down and discuss a Palestinian state. Then they sit down at the table. Then we negotiate a deal roughly along the 1967 borders, a two-state deal. Let's say that happens, share Jerusalem. After that, every single attack launched from Hamas against Israel, which I do think is going to happen, of course, well, then the whole world is going to unite behind Israel and go, wait. We try to do a two-state deal. We try to be reasonable. We did a two-state deal. We have a two-state deal now. We should move towards long-term peace now and not continue fighting. But Hamas were the ones that just decided we're going to go on the offense and continue to fight even after there was a deal. And that the whole world is going to go, Israel's right, Hamas is wrong, and this is fucked up, and we need to put an end to Hamas violence. That simple. The whole world will unite behind Israel if you do a two-state deal. But they're not doing it, and they don't want to do it. Likud doesn't want to do it. Netanyahu doesn't want to do it. So you force them to do it. If I'm Obama, I'm saying, oh, really? So you don't want to do it. That's nice. All of the over $1 billion worth of aid gone. You're not getting any aid. Sorry. What am I going to do? Are you serious about this or not? If you want to negotiate and you want to do a two-state deal, you get all the aid. You know, the U.S. can lift our veto at the U.N., and make it possible to have a Palestinian state. I would do that immediately. Why wouldn't I do that? Do BDS. Tell them, look, come to the table or we're going to go and do BDS. And then if they say no, do it. They say yes, don't do it. But sit down, work it out, get the 67 borders, do a deal, and then after that, everybody's going to line up behind Israel if Hamas attacks. It's that simple. But, of course, they don't want to do it, and we're taking little steps in the right direction here where they say, label the stuff coming out of the occupied territories, because guess what? People that have a conscience don't want to buy shit coming out of the occupied territories. Look, I get it. I don't want to buy anything. We did a story yesterday about child slaves working in mines in the Congo that are the battery in your phone and your laptop. I'm against that too, and we need to fight to change that as well. Believe you me, I want to lead that fight, okay? I'm against buying shit from the slave labor, child workers, you name it. I'll boycott everybody if I have to do it and try to bring about a better world. But that doesn't excuse the occupation, which is also bad. And yes, if you have a conscience and you know something's bought in the occupied territories and it's labeled, you probably shouldn't buy it because you shouldn't support that. Okay, so it's a step in the right direction. Let's go further, and we need to bring about a two-state deal. Enough. The occupation has gone on too long. Okay, try to squeeze in two more, even though I won't get there. Milwaukee's TMJ4 is reporting on Christian fundamentalists who are trying to block a mosque from being built. They say, quote, the Christian Civil Liberties Union, interesting name, asked community members to take a stand against a mosque coming to South Milwaukee. One of the speakers said, I'm here because I'm trying to encourage Christians to stand up for their Christian beliefs. Apparently, in his mind, that means by blocking other religions from having houses of worship. Another person said, there's going to be, I predict, bloodshed in one of these years coming up. Okay, that one's scary because I don't know what the fuck they're saying. What are you saying? Are you saying you think the Muslims are going to do violence? Or are you saying we might have to do it against them if they build a mosque? I don't know what you're saying, but either way, it's creepy, and I don't like it. Now, thankfully, some reasonable people were there as well. The mayor fell on the side of freedom of religion, and a school teacher said the following, quote, I couldn't let it happen. I couldn't let people be denied freedom of religion in a country that's based upon your freedom of religion and your freedom to practice your own beliefs. It's un-American, and it's unacceptable. Hear, hear. But let's just pause and reflect for a minute on the irony of the Christian Civil Liberties Union, which they say, hey, we argue for religious freedom. It's religious freedom for Muslims just to build a mosque. They ain't setting up an ISIS camp. This isn't Al-Qaeda. This isn't a Salafi group. They're just building a mosque. They're like, no, we're against that. Your whole thing, Christian Civil Liberties Union, religious civil liberties, that's what you're pushing for, freedom of religion. But for us, not for them. For us, not for them. Guys, this isn't debatable. In a country that has freedom of religion, you don't get to say, I'm going to reject it simply because it is Islam and it is it's Muslims and it's a mosque, and I don't like that one, so I'm just going to reject it. Well, that sucks for you. You don't have that choice in a country that has freedom of religion. Now, don't get me wrong. If it's a fundamentalist community that pops up, whether it's Christian or Muslim or any kind, I'm going to call it out and I'm going to say, you don't have the right to take away others' rights. Okay? So the fundamentalists are the problem. But still, that doesn't mean that if all the information you have is it's a mosque, they're building a mosque, you don't have the right to say, I'm just going to stop it. Stop. You're not allowed to. In the same way, I can't say, I don't want that church down the street because I disagree with all religions. That doesn't mean I get to block churches. Doesn't mean you get to block mosques. This stuff should be obvious, but apparently it's not. All right, I'm out of time. Love you guys. Fun as always. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. A whole bunch of stuff for you. Kisses. Everybody take care. Peace.